Welcome back. We are now on the phone with Emma Smith, member of the CLAC and organizer of the rally, who took part in the anti-capitalist contingent last night at the May Day protest. Hello, Emma.
Hi.
Hi, Emma. Could you describe last night's May Day rally for me?
Yeah. What we saw was a very boisterous and energetic demonstration. In fact, there was a demonstration that began in front of City Hall, but to which two other marches converged onto, one from the west of the downtown core and one from east. It was a, like I said, there was a lot of energy. There was a marching band. There was obviously banners and flags and people with children in strollers and all kinds of things. And the march, after converging in front of the City Hall, eventually started to make its way over to the private club 357C, which unfortunately we were never able to actually reach.
Okay, and what other organizations were represented?
Well, this was a march that was entirely organized by the CLAC, which is the Montreal Anti-Capitalist Convergence. So I'm sure, I mean, obviously many groups and individuals attended, but as in terms of organizing the march itself, it was CLAC.
All right. And why was the demonstration declared illegal and at what time?
Well, that's a great question. The demonstration was declared illegal by the police forces under P6, which is the controversial municipal bylaw of which the additions that were made to it last May are the controversial parts of it, namely that any protest organizers have to notify and negotiate with the police the routes of any demonstrations that they might be organizing, as well as rendering illegal the wearing of any kind of mask at a demonstration. So it's still too early to say which provisions exactly under the bylaw were ultimately the ones that were used for all 447 people that were ticketed last night. But those are some of the provisions that are problematic.
Okay. And why were the protesters headed to destination 357C last night?
357C is a private club that has been mentioned on numerous occasions in the Charbonneau Commission, which is still underway, as a meeting point for several of the political and business elite and criminal organized crime, where various like backroom dealings and corruption and collusion was taking place, all in what the club describes as a very sumptuous environment.
And could you describe the austerity measures that you were fighting against both last night and in general?
Well, I mean, austerity measures, there are so many that are underway, and just the continual grinding poverty that instead of getting better, it just continues to get worse. You know, whether we're talking about cuts to the funding of social housing, or if we're talking about the Harper government's complete reconstruction of unemployment insurance as we know it. You know, there's any number of fronts that we can look at. Of course, it goes without saying, you know, tuition fees being one of the topics that was very much highlighted in the past year and a half. So the increased cost of living, the continuing weakening of people's ability to earn a living wage, as well as the precarity of jobs. I mean, all of these are part of like a general wave of austerity that's sweeping not just Canada, but the world over.
Right. And why is P6 happening now, and what role is it playing in enforcing these austerity measures?
Well, I think it's no surprise that P6 comes on the heels of a very successful campaign, which began with, strictly speaking, the question of student fees and increasing them. But as anybody who followed these protests last year could say immediately broadened into a far bigger discussion than just strictly speaking about increased student fees. It was really about what kind of priorities we set for ourselves as a society with regards to spending, with regards to the distribution of resources and wealth. And so starting to question a lot of those things. And I think the tenacity and the commitment of the protesters who were far more than just students has been very uncomfortable for many in power, especially as they continue to be under the gun with the Charbonneau Commission, which only becomes more and more shocking and revealing in how far the corruption goes.
Okay. And P6, it's ostensibly put in place to protect small business owners, no, and citizens. But is it really protecting anyone?
I think that all of these claims are really, it's just a great spin that we see in other forms at other times where whenever the status quo wants to impose limitations, infringements, or repress any of our civil liberties, whether it's the ability to peaceably assemble or whatnot, they always wave the red herring of fear and security to try to convince the population that these are reasonable limitations. And I think that it is, I think it's just that. There's no call for these things because any property damage or any fears that small business or owners might have with regards to protesting or with regards to things that might happen to their private property for whatever reason are amply covered by the current criminal code. So there's no reason to then just completely eliminate the ability to peaceably assemble, I think, or to impose that these things have to be negotiated through the police. Obviously, that's going to be problematic. Obviously, it's going to lead to the police managing how and when people can protest, regardless of whether or not criminal activity were to take place. So it goes far and beyond its stated intent.
All right, and we're just about out of time. Do you have anything to add?
I would just say that despite the 447 arrests yesterday, which, you know, some might try to claim were done to stop a marginal group of people who were doing the very things that people often try to tag on to certain types of protesters, I'd highlight that the police used P6 this morning, or so parents claim, at a elementary school that where parents were simply trying to highlight the dangers of fast cars and traffic directly outside of their children's elementary school. And P6 was used as a justification, according to parents there, to stop parents from having their protest. They hadn't informed the police beforehand. All they were doing was crossing at a stoplight when the light was green. And so I think we're starting to see the absurdity of these kinds of laws. I think it's important that we should always keep in mind that when people are being under attack, when their basic civil freedoms are under attack, there's no such thing, oh, it's just them. It's always everybody, and everyone has to have these basic freedoms.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're still tuned in of the hour, and the time is now about 5:15. We are going to turn now to our three guests in studio with us, William Ray, Michelle Moore, and Chris Richards, from CUTV as producer, reporter, and technician, to speak about their arrest and at the rally last night by the SPVM, where 447 people were arrested and charged with $637 tickets.
And thank you so much for joining us. I know I've heard that you were kept up until late into the night with keeping the SPVM company. So thanks for coming to talk to us.
Oh, you're welcome.
So I guess first off, could you just tell us a little bit about what the what it was like being in the kettle, like what exactly happened, and what it was like once you were there?
Well, inside the kettle, it wasn't our first experience being kettled, unfortunately. We were surrounded by, the riot police, and they kept pushing in to make it tighter and tighter, so we didn't have very much space. That lasted for about 3 hours, and then after that, they started to take people in small groups, tie wrap them, search them, and put them onto buses to be brought over to the station all the way in L'Angelier.
So how much time total did you spend?
Roughly 7 or 8 hours. Okay. So the protest started at 6. We were kettled at 6:30. We were put onto a bus and tie-wrapped around 10 p.m. and then released at 2 a.m.
And what was it like being in the kettle? Like, what was the mood?
In the kettle, I mean, it's, you know, the mood's actually... People really try and stay jovial, but I think everybody's sort of fighting the same thing, because I mean, you get angry, you see there are elderly people in there, and you see basically grandma very angry, because I mean, this is unreal. These are very large armored men. They're being very aggressive. We have on film them, two of these men, about 200 pound guys, beat this little 20-year-old girl down to the ground with their batons. Like, really swinging these things, and then to be restrained in cuffs for 4 hours so you can give me a ticket, really,
And I noticed that you brought your tickets with you here today to the studio, which I appreciate. And I actually noticed that it's $1 more than what I thought the fee was supposed to be, which is $637.
Inflation.
They added $1 to the fee. That that surprised me. And so I know that you were actually live streaming from the event last night. Did the SPVM pose any problems to that process, to you live streaming?
Well, before they confiscated our equipment and handcuffed us? Because after that filming was difficult. Although, they attack us physically many times. We've had confrontations with the SPVM. They have struck us. They pepper sprayed her in the face one night. We've had our equipment destroyed by them. Generally they don't treat us in any different manner than they do. The mainstream media yesterday, I was laughing because some of the mainstream media had hired little security guard guys.
I saw
and
that,
the poor
yeah.
little security guard guy, boy, he looked lost.
I actually wanted to ask you about that, because I personally, as a journalist, I have been to one of the protests where everyone got kettled, and I eventually decided not to use my press pass to get out of the kettle, just mostly because I felt kind of weird about it. And I was wondering where you, all three of you, I guess, stand on that.
On March 22nd, we were kettled and eventually taken away, told we were going to receive tickets in the mail, and then told, not to come back, otherwise we'd be arrested and detained. But what was different was we weren't put on the buses like the other protesters and hauled away.
And that was because you showed them your press passes?
Yes, yeah. And that was already a little strange to me. But the following week, so on April 5th, we were also kettled, but this time we were taken out of the kettle by the SPVM without receiving a ticket. And I actually felt really guilty about that because, we hadn't done anything wrong, but neither had, the 200-300 people in the kettle. So, yeah, I did feel... uncomfortable about that.
And so was it a conscious choice to not get out of the kettle this time?
We didn't really see the kettle coming. There's times where you kind of have a hunch and you decide, okay, we can either leave now or we can let it happen.
With your press passes, like, to,
right.
Yeah.
So once we were kettled, they know who we are anyways. So we kind of assumed that if we were going to be let out, they would have done it automatically. Because they were looking at us for 3 hours and were easy to recognize, so...
And Curtis, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I don't know. I'm just still a little sleepy and stunned at the excessive force for what could have been just a little May Day march around town. And
yeah, I understand.
The big fuss. Yeah.
So actually, I wanted to talk about the size of the protest, because it was. I've read reports that there were about 2,000 people who were there. And that is actually significantly bigger than most of the protests that have been happening over the past couple of weeks, ever since P6 has been enforced. Did you notice anything? Did that strike you, that it seemed bigger, or did you not? notice? Did not seem bigger?
It was a fair-sized crowd, but, I mean, I've seen the SBM riot squad handle larger crowds than that. So it wasn't big enough that it prevented police action.
Right.
You know, when you get, like, Earth Day, you know, once you get above 10,000 people, you don't see them because they're not stupid enough to poke something that big with a stick. The police were very aggressive right from the start. People had literally not done a thing, and they started cutting it into groups and so on. So,
And so the protest was declared illegal because they didn't provide an itinerary. Is that correct?
No, actually, an itinerary was provided.
Okay.
Because obviously their location that they were going to was this club, right? So that's what a lot of protesters were asking. They said, our itinerary was given, no one's wearing masks. Like, why are we being arrested under P6? And of course, they made an announcement, but as usual, you can't hear much that comes out of the van. It's very incoherent. So, we're not really sure. All I have is what's written on my ticket, which says that I participated or was present at an assembly that was putting in danger the peace and security or the order of public domain.
Right. And so that kind of calls into question the entire discussion about P6, because it's really been, a lot of people have been saying, well, you know, why don't protesters just want to give their itinerary? It's not that difficult. And then all of these problems will go away. So the fact that there was an itinerary given, I guess, kind of changes the discussion.
Yeah, I suppose it does, because, I mean, like, at base, there's no reason to attack peaceful crowds with large armored troops there. But yeah, absolutely. This is some mechanism of the state trying to control what the public's doing. Public, you know, and so it's not really about whether people give a root or not. Why would they care, really?
Mm-hmm. And so just for our listeners who might not understand all of the vocabulary that we're using here, a kettle is a way of containing protesters in a group. And so they... What happens is the police encircles the group and then doesn't let them go, or lets them go after they have been ticketed and processed. And P6 is a municipal bylaw that was amended during the student strike last spring, and it added two notable provisions, one of which is that no protesters can be masked, and the other is that the itinerary has to be given to the and approved by the police in advance. And so I wanted to turn to a discussion of media coverage of what's been happening, because I've noticed, not only in my own reporting but in others, that a lot of times the discussion comes to be more about P6 than what the protest is actually supposed to be about. And so I feel, I mean, in this discussion, like, we're kind of like talking more about the kettle and the tickets than we are about the May Day protest. And so I was wondering what you think kind of like the effect of that is, to what degree we as the media are complicit in that.
Whatever the original issue of these marches is, May Day or anything else, I mean, my opinion, I mean, realistically, the issue now is the P6, because it doesn't matter what your issue is, you don't have the right to express it, or you're going to get beaten by a guy with a club. Mm-hmm. Held for, I mean, most countries on this planet do not allow detention like that over civic tickets. You know, this is ridiculous, and there's no need for it. I mean, one of the things that struck me going through the processing process was this could have all been done on site. We were all standing in a circle for 4 hours. They could have taken two people out at a time, put them on a bus, show us your ID, here's your ticket, bye-bye, don't come back.
Yeah, I've been in a similar situation on October 22nd of last year where I was in a kettle, and that's exactly what they did. They took us out one by one, printed out tickets, and we were escorted out of the perimeter, and everyone just left the area.
Yeah, so not only are they giving me a $600 ticket, but, I mean, this is obviously willful. They want to detain me for long periods of time. They want to put me in cuffs. They want me to feel that. That is not the job of my police department. And to me, they are not in the pursuit of their lawful duties when they're enforcing this.
Right. Do you feel like talking about P6 and what's going on with the police kind of takes precedence because it's the most urgent that's happening right now?
I've spoken to other protesters, and there's a kind of common feeling that the police have started to enforce P6 to distract us from the real issues. Now, whether or not that's true is, you know, for people to, you know, decide for themselves. But basically, you know, as William was saying, yeah, you know, I mean, if a group of parents and their children can't express how they feel about, you know, security at a traffic light without having the P6 fall on them, I mean, it really is, you know, necessary to pass through, you know, to try and get this law taken down, because otherwise we can't, you know, claim anything. So.
And so in terms of your coverage of it, and I guess the coverage in general, what do you think that the public's perception of what's been going on is? Like, do you think that people are, in general, are sympathetic to the cause of protesters?
I think it's very polarized. I think you have a certain segment of the population that's very sympathetic, and a certain population, or a certain percentage of the population, that has really been convinced by the mainstream media that this is a bunch of hooligan kids in black toques hucking rocks through windows.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's really significant is the disinformation. So, for example, yesterday we heard, because people had their smartphones, right? So we're still trapped in the kettle. It's 8:30. We've been in there 2 hours, and still, you know, several hours from our actual freedom. And TVA was announcing on television that the protest was over and everyone was home. So, and that didn't happen until 3 a.m, and they announced this at 8:30. And they also, on the radio, in the cab ride home at 3 a.m, I heard, you know, that they were announcing that people were throwing rocks, which is completely false. I mean, so, yeah, it's, you know, if people are given the wrong information, of course they'll make those assumptions right. About the people involved, so.
Yeah, actually, let's clarify that, because the SPVM tweeted that, and they actually didn't say directly that this was the reason that the protest was being shut down. They did tweet that, I think, that there were broken bottles and what they called béton being thrown at the police. Did you, you didn't see any of that?
The only thing thrown was a balloon of paint.
Yeah, no, not at all. And where we were kettled, actually, was right by a construction site. And
there were tons of rocks on the ground in the kettle with us.
Oh, yeah.
For three hours, if anyone wanted to huck rocks, they would
have. Nice big paving stone, sharp edges. Oh, yeah, man. You give this a half. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So there was none of that at all?
No. No, absolutely not. And we got it all on film. And we had a guy on a roof filming it, so.
Which the police did not notice. Speaks to their incompetence. I mean, he could have been a sniper. They don't know. He was there for 2 hours. They didn't even see him.
Yeah. And so did you get this? Do you get the sense that people weren't, like, some people are sympathetic, I guess, and other people?
I get the sense that for me, coming from an alternative media point of view, I get the sense that we are not doing a very good job communicating beyond our own group. We are talking to ourselves a lot, and we are not communicating to the, you know, Joe taxpayer out in Longueuil. You know, some aspects of the student strike weren't great for that. Like the casseroles, I mean, it's cute, but you're going through people's neighborhoods, waking up construction workers and their kids at 3 a.m. You know, so we haven't done a good job of informing them.
Do you think you could do a better job?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. You know, we need to shape our message in a way that is acceptable and understandable to them. We can't start coming at them with you know, we need to be within their comfort zone and still show them, A, how this affects you. It doesn't just affect college kids, it affects you. And why you need to do something about it. Like when they passed the law 78, everyone in my neighborhood descended into the street. Everybody, you know, like, yeah. And if we were doing a better job, I think we could get more of that reaction. So I think that's the issue we face as alternative media.
Right. Yeah. And I guess we're coming to the end, but do either of you have anything you want to add before we wrap up?
Well, I think apathy is a real problem. So when we were trapped in the kettle and people were still being beaten and things like that, there was people, because we were in the old port, so there were still people eating their meal on the terrace, you know, a few, like, meters away from
us. Could you see anything about their reactions, like what they were?
No, I mean, they just seemed like, oh, it's another day in Montreal, you know, and that really shouldn't be the case. Like,
one of the women came off the terraces and was getting her picture taken with one of the riot cops.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen tourists a lot, you know, they'll place themselves in front of the protest and they'll make a smile or a thumbs up and then, yeah, and then they just leave. They don't see what actually happens after.
It's the new normal. We have noticed that when we're filming. Like, we'll see people, there'll be a line of riot cops. And some, you know, average citizen will walk by with his smoke and his coffee and just... Bleh.
And they barely look up. Even children, small children, maybe 5 years old, they barely even look up at the police anymore, you know? Parents don't walk any faster. It's really just the new norm, and it shouldn't be. People should ask themselves why there are troops marching through their city, and take that seriously, and, you know.
Yeah, and I guess we should all, as journalists, we should all think about how we can do a better job of talking to people so that they feel that it shouldn't be normal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to us. We've been talking with the reporting team from CUTV last night who got into a sticky situation with the SPVM when they were trapped in a kettle until 3 a.m. And we've been talking to William May, Michelle Moore, and Curz Riches.
Well, thank you for inviting us.